Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining me on another episode of Your Dose of Death podcast. As always, my name is Lauren Rosenberg. Thank you guys so much for joining me each and every single week on this fantastic podcast. As always, thank you to everyone, including, of course, my sponsors. Of course, Grateful Deathmatch. Make sure you hit them up with that promo code of death for free shipping across the United States and beyond. And, of course, make sure you hit up Crimson Mask at officialcrimsonmask.bigcartel.com and make sure you put in the promo code of YDOD for that John Wayne Murdoch bundle, the Duke of Hardcore bundle. That is some awesome stuff. And of course, you guys are wondering who I have on today. I have someone who actually asked to be on this podcast. I was, as always, glad to have him on. He is an incredible expert of all things deathmatch journalism, and all things of the Japan deathmatch scene as well. A man who has made the rounds and, of course, is also a fellow podcaster, hosting, of course, the highly acclaimed World of Deathmatch podcast on the GCW Patreon. Of course, I am joined by none other than Mr. Stephen A. himself. Stephen, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing very good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's another day in the life. Can't complain, you know?
Yeah. Well, I complain a lot, so.
Well, some people like to say that. Some people also like to say you're very insightful. Of course, you and Alex Colon host the very well critically acclaimed World of Deathmatch podcast on the GCW Patreon. And really, I would like to personally say it's thanks to you guys. Really opened up my eyes to the Japanese side of the deathmatch world. Without that common knowledge or so, I wouldn't really be able to do these kind of things. Of course, you have been really great and giving great insight to the Japanese scene. So I do want to personally thank you. And I think many people would like to thank you as well for just kind of opening up their horizons. So of course, many people still may or may not know who you are. I just want you to give kind of like a little background of your, let's say, like occupation in the business, other of course than podcasting, and what you have done throughout your time as a wrestling fan / journalist.
Sure. I mean, I'm 34. I've been into wrestling since forever. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, where ICP was a big deal. I literally saw the Shawn Michaels Undertaker Hell in the Cell. That was my first time seeing wrestling. And then a month later, I saw, what's the video called? Stranglemania, right? And I had the internet. I was one of those kids. I had a library, and I knew how to use the internet to get, like, cheat codes. So I was searching stuff, and I was buying Japanese wrestling tapes at the age of 11 or 12 with money orders, you know, sending money orders through the mail to strangers. And, you know, I've always been just deep into the Japanese stuff. I'm one of the old school dudes, and I was deep into the internet. I was one of the first guys on the internet, which now the internet's ruined, but this was back when it was still, you know, kind of pure a little bit, I guess. So I was just a fan, and I've had my waxes and wanings of being a fan. But, you know, I can honestly say, like, of all the people on the internet kind of being vocal about things, I was there and saw all of it. I ran a Big Japan fan website as a kid when I was like 12 and 13 and 14. So I was writing results and news and all this type of stuff. So, you know, I have like that little memory in the back of my head about how all of this works, about the CZW wars and stuff. And yeah, so that was just who I was for a while. And then one day, I got in contact with Bahu, FMW guy, and through a lot of happenstance, we started the History of FMW podcast, and that got me even deeper into, and I was writing like a newsletter literally for fun. I've worked in Asia since 2014, and you had a lot. And I remember I went to a Tokyo Deathmatch Carnival show in 2018 or 17. I can't remember which year. And I left and I saw some guys on a message board saying something that wasn't true. Like, yeah, Jun Kasai is the Big Japan champion. And I was like, that's not true. I'm sick of seeing things that aren't true. That bothers me. So on the plane ride home from Japan, I wrote up a big review of the Tokyo Deathmatch Carnival show. And that became a newsletter. And it's just kind of spiraled from there. As far as my involvement in the wrestling business, I don't really have any. I know Brett through just getting reports from shows through him and things like that. And then when they wanted to launch the Patreon over COVID, he was like, hey, do you want to launch a show? I'm always hesitant to do podcasts because they're so – can I swear on this show?
Go ahead.
There's so fucking many podcasts. It's like crazy. But – to any of your listeners who may not be on the Patreon, there was a certain person in the business who made the comment of, why would I pay for a podcast? Alex has some show and I'm not going to pay for a podcast. Then you're missing out. You know, I set out when we started the World of Deathmatch, podcast, I had like a little kind of a show Bible of sorts. And I was like, this is what I want the show to be, and this is what I don't want it to be. I think that we have a really good show that examines the business, that doesn't pull punches. We don't just sit around half drunk, just, you know, blowing wrestlers, and, you know, like, it's a real show, you know, and it's, you know, I kind of base it off of like the Dave Meltzer show where he says, hey, look, this didn't work. This did work. These were the gates. This is the history of the belt. You know, we do retrospectives. We do like deep dives on like history. So I'm sorry I go on for forever, but yeah, that's basically it, man.
Well, no, I very much appreciate it because, I've been a listener of the World of Deathmatch podcast since day one. And I know I've talked before on other podcasts about how I started this podcast, but, definitely the work that you and Alex Colon put in each and every week kind of helped inspire me to kind of do my own thing, not carbon copy and whatnot, but it definitely has helped me as well. And, trying to like find my own footing. And, of course, having you on this show was an absolute must when I decided to start this. And, for those of you that don't know, Steven was one of the very first people when I told him I wanted to do a podcast. I had to have you on. And now a few months later, we're doing this as well. So I personally thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule, of course, as well. You do, as you said, you do live in Japan since 2014, you said?
Well, I lived in China, but I can fly to Japan. Now I've lived in Japan since COVID started. So yeah, but yeah.
So I think a good question to start off with in the world of Japanese death matches. I know you always have your eye on the scene. It's always evolving in a way, but really if people want to start watching, Japanese death matches or those kind of shows, where would you point them in the direction of, like, what's the direction you'd point them in?
Oh man, that's a hard question to answer. Okay, so I'm gonna speak very really. You know, on Twitter you have The Real Hero. The Real Hero uploads anything that's on Samurai TV will get uploaded to The Real Hero Twitter account, and that's for Big Japan, Freedoms, blah blah blah. They do have smaller shows, these companies. Mm-hmm. You can find a lot of those on a service called Nico Nico, But we also have a World of Deathmatch Discord, which I don't know how people can find it. If you hit any of us up on Twitter, we can add you. But that has a community where we try to share some of the Japanese shows. You used to be able to find this stuff on YouTube, but Samurai TV has shut that down hard, which, hey, it's their copyrighted stuff. They can do anything they want with it. Good for them. So, yeah, I would say the Real Hero Twitter account and then the World of Deathmatch Discord server is where you're going to be able to really be able to keep track of it and watch it in, like, basically real time as stuff comes out. That's the easy answer.
Yeah, the easy answer is always the best answer, in my opinion. So, yeah, it's definitely, if after this episode, if you're curious about the World Deathmatch Discord, definitely hit me or Steven up. We're both part of that Discord. Always happy to lend a hand in helping more people find more deathmatch content, or if they're new to the world of deathmatch, no pun intended, they can definitely come our way. So, of course, right now, though, Freedoms, I would highly recommend as well, because they just have been on another level since really the last few years. I know you've been attending a few shows here and there for Freedoms. What was the most recent show you were at for Freedoms?
The most recent one was a Shinkiba show. That was the Shinkiba show. I think it was June. Man, I don't know. It was the one with the glass board main event, the tag team glass board main event. Yeah.
Who was that? I think it was who was that main event in that main event?
It was Takeda and Violento Jack against Toru Segura and Kasai in a glass board match in Shinkiba, which, you know, they don't do. And I keep on saying the glass board match because they don't do glass boards at Shinkiba. But what happened was that match was supposed to be the main event of a Kuroken Hall show in May that got canceled because of COVID. Well, by Japanese, it's I don't know, custom, I guess, they have to give you the main event that they promised you. So they moved the glass board show to Shinkiba. Now, what people don't know is in Shinkiba, you're 4 feet from the ring. Like, you're right against the ring. And man, when that glass board exploded, it rained down on me and it cut through my clothes. And, like,
oh, really? Wow.
I was like, this is dangerous. You know, like, they really shouldn't be putting glass boards this close to the ring or to the crowd. But, you know, that's my opinion. But yeah, I mean, Freedoms, you know, one thing that I think, if I could clear up anything for, like, casual viewers, there is a huge difference between Big Japan and Freedoms. It's not like in America where, you know, companies are kind of just like, they're operated by a cell phone. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Here in Japan, these companies are really companies. They have employees under contract. If you're a contract employee, you have healthcare benefits. You know what I mean? It's like a real company. And so you do have the freelance guys like, you know, Masashi Takeda and a few others that will move between the companies, but each company has their own core roster. And and they have different ethics of doing business. They have different ideas of how to build shows. And it was about a year ago or so that Freedoms started doing US style booking, basically. And this year it really picked up. They've got guys doing heel turns, forming heel groups. They're doing run-ins. They're doing all of this stuff. And it creates a two week, because they do shows every 2 weeks, basically. Uh-huh. a two week storyline, you know. And my wife, she's never seen wrestling before in her entire life, and so I get to take her to shows, and when a guy does a heel turn, she's like, why would he do that? I don't understand what's going on, you know. It's so fun to me to do that, whereas Big Japan is much more guy, you know, guy, man, dude versus strong boy, and I will defeat you. You know, it's more like that classic Japanese booking style.
Yeah, I definitely have noticed that through my experience of watching Freedoms as well as Big Japan, since I've started to learn about those two promotions and realize there's more deathmatch wrestling than just in the United States. And yes, I know that ERE and Freedoms has really been hot as of late. That faction, yeah, I don't think you could have imagined. Of course, the big story in Japan was Sakuta leaving Big Japan, going to Freedoms, still finding his footing in a way, but to form a faction that has really gotten over in the States even. Like, you hear people in the United States being like, oh yeah, ERE is really over, and I'm like, that's pretty global, because considering Sakuta is a very American-oriented deathmatch person, it's very interesting to see that. I am curious, though, with going to these shows, I do want, as you already did put out a difference with this kind of styles that both companies do, but what's the experience like as a fan at these shows? Is there like a difference, or?
Yeah. Oh, it was a huge difference. I mean, what people need to realize about Japanese wrestling, and I hate to say what people need to realize, but it's just such a different world where, we have the streaming services and all this type of stuff. That stuff's not popular here. Samurai TV, okay? Samurai TV is a satellite pay channel. You have to pay money to get it on satellite. Satellite TV at any given moment has between 5,000 to 10,000 subscribers in the entire country. You know, I know that Nico Plus, which was a YouTube version of Nico, which uploaded a wrestling show every day, that topped out at about 500 subs in the entire world. You know what I mean? The viewing base for viewing Japanese wrestling on a screen is very fucking small. And if you're a foreigner, you're a bonus. You're not the target audience. You're a bonus to those guys. They aren't going like, holy shit, we got more subs in California. They don't care. You know, it's like, that's a bonus. What their business is live event shit, selling merchant chindise, sponsors. When you go to these shows, your chair has a flyer from like a local cell phone store or something. You know, it's about live event business. So I'm sorry, what was the fucking question, dude?
It's fine, man.
Oh wait, okay, so BJW, what's it like to go? Yeah, so with Big Japan, is completely, the crowd that goes there is completely dependent on what the match is and do they want to see it, because Big Japan is not a character company. It's not a cult of personality company. It's about, oh wow, they built up this match and they haven't done it in a while, so I want to watch it. They built up Isami Kodaka versus Yuko Miyamoto, and that's a match they haven't done in a while, and I want to watch it, so I will buy a ticket and I will go see it. Whereas Freedoms is much more like a cult. Freedoms is much more like, I fucking love Freedoms. It's a fucking brand. I love, you know, Kasai or Takeda, whatever. And it's much more that cult. And when you go to a Freedom show pre-COVID, I mean, it was so much more. You could really feel it pre-COVID. I mean, pre-COVID, we could get drunk up in there. We didn't have to sit in seats, you know, and it was a rowdy fucking place to be. And they would oversell shows, and we were just packed in like fucking chicken coops, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, at a Freedom show, it was much more a fucking party with a wrestling match happening. Big Japan is much more like baseball. You know, it's much more, oh, I got off work at 5:30. I might head down. They do a lot more walk-up business. You know what I mean? And it's much more older people, guys in business suits. It's much more people who have just kind of been following it since their childhood kind of thing, you know? Oh, it's much more respectful, ha-ha, ooh, good clothesline kind of shit. Whereas in Freedoms, it's way more, they're Japanese, so they aren't going to say, fuck your mother, but they will say, like, I do not respect you, sir. You know what I mean? Kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
I get that. Absolutely. That's very interesting that you say that about BJW being more formal. I didn't really think about that until now that I'm, going back and, like, watching, thinking about the matches that I've watched versus Freedoms, where, yeah, you're right, Freedoms, it feels like a real crowd, a real party. So,
well, Big Japan is run by a wrestler who's 79. You know, like, this is, Great Kodujika. You know, okay. I mean, he's 79. He wrestled in All Japan in the, you know, in the 60s and 70s and stuff. So what I've always heard kind of, you know, that will Pete, that the wrestlers will kind of comment on is he sees wrestling this way. You know, he's old. It's like if Jerry Jarrett started a company, it would probably be a Jerry Jarrett company. You know what I mean? He sees wrestling as a sports competition, you know?
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. And you were talking about a little bit, how is it like with the wrestlers at both companies? I know you definitely have some insight into that. And yeah, there's definitely been some very public opinions towards the way that both companies are being run.
Well, it's like, you know, it's very hard to talk about this because I never, you know, one time, well, it happened more than once, I became the source of a rumor. And, you know, and it's more so people just misconstruing what I say. And that happens all over, the, you know, all the time. So
exactly.
I'm always very, I'm very careful when I talk about this stuff. And I'm very careful to state what is public and what is not public.
Yeah.
But, Big Japan will run in 1 month anywhere from 10 to 25 times. There's been months where they run every single day, practically. They do sold shows. They do spot shows. They do sponsored shows. They do dojo shows. It goes on and on and on. They are a merchandise monster. The stack of merchandise at their shows is outrageous. They have like, it's literally like, get your Big Japan action figures and pillows and flamethrower. Like, oh, it's seriously like space balls, you know. It's crazy the merch that they print up, and they have a huge roster. The Big Japan contracted roster is over 20 guys. Like, it's wow, very big. With Freedoms, it's like 12, you know. And so with Big Japan, and plus they have this huge dojo facility in Yokohama. They have various little business interests, like stores. They own vending machines around town, you know. With Freedoms, it's much more like this tiny, tiny company. It's a very, very tiny company. I haven't seen their training dojo, but I've seen photos of it, and it's an apartment with pads in it. You know what I mean? Versus Big Japan's dojo is a giant warehouse. It's a huge warehouse with you know, dorms and bunks and shit.
I saw the BJW one when they did Deathmatch Survivor, the Sakuta. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge. And so actually that was, because someone's going to get me, that was the 2AW dojo. But the
Big Japan was
dojo,
okay.
It's similar. It's similar. It's almost the same thing.
Okay.
It's as big and stuff. I don't want someone being like, oh, he thinks he's smart. Yeah, that was the 2AW. Actually, that was the 2AW dojo, Einstein. Anyway, so I hate Twitter so much, man. So what I'm trying to get is as, last year in May, because of COVID, mm-hmm, Big Japan went bankrupt. They went completely bankrupt. And, you know, you can read in Jun Kasai's book, which has recently been translated into English and stuff. And you can hear stories from various Americans who have been there. Masada is one of them. Big Japan has trouble paying guys a lot. You know, there are points throughout history where they have trouble paying guys. Now, if you're a freelancer, you get paid the day you fucking show up. And if they don't pay you, you don't fucking work there. If you're a contracted guy, they give you your health care. You know what I mean? You got to keep showing up. And yeah, guys have left the company. You know, I know that Big Japan, it's like this double-edged sword where if you stay, you have the potential to get booked 20 times a month and to sell more merch and to blah, 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 and to be part of a guaranteed system. If you leave, you could become your own boss. You could become a bigger star, you know, and everyone has their own mindset. And Sakuda is a guy, and Takayuki Ueki are guys who just said, we want to try out our own thing. And I think it's paid off for them big time. But you can see there's guys that have stayed with, you know, the Big Japan roster, and they're like, hey, this is my time. I'm going to grab the ball and I'm going to grow and I'm going to take it. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, it's like any company. You have to decide what you're worth in every thing. And I think that Big Japan and Freedoms offer different things to the workers.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, especially for my listeners who aren't as familiar with the style of work that BJW or Freedoms brings to the table.
And yeah, real quick, when you work for Big Japan, or Freedoms, you have to do office work. These guys are literally cleaning and cooking, and they're putting up flyers, and they're doing and all of that stuff. And with BJW, you're going to do a lot more of that stuff than with Freedoms. You know, Freedoms might be a 3 or 4 day a week job. Big Japan is a 7 day a week job, pretty
much. Wow.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good part to bring out, because you don't see that in the States. Or you don't see it very often, per se, unless actually probably never even at all, now that I think about it. So I think it's definitely something to bring up, that this is literally their job for some of these guys. This is their livelihoods. And it definitely is interesting that you bring up the double-edged sword part with Big Japan, because I do remember when World of Deathmatch first started, you guys went into very grave detail about, of course, the BJW versus CZW wars. Of course, the whole infamous John Zandig run where he made himself champion and whatnot, and basically was the kingpin of BJW for a while. And of course, it's interesting that you bring up that payment part, because that's something I did not know. And as I said, guys, I'm still learning day by day about this stuff as well. I'm a student of the game, as they say. So I kind of want to shift gears towards the American side of things, of course.
Sure.
Your involvement with the GCW Patreon. I know you speak very highly of GCW, and I just want you to kind of, if someone were to ask you why GCW is your favorite company at the moment right now in wrestling, what are the reasons for that statement?
So, I'm really open about this, and if anybody feels differently, good for you. It's a great time to watch wrestling. There's so much motherfucking wrestling. It's coming out our ears. It's insane. You have IWTV, you have, you know, all of everything is streamed on Fight. All of the Japanese stuff is here to watch. You know, obviously you have the WWE Network and all the brands they've got. I don't have time. I did not watch Camp Leapfrog. You know what I mean? I didn't, you know, I don't have time. So for me, I made the equivalency that to me, a wrestling is like baseball, and the companies are the teams. Now I might like the Yankees, right? And I'll watch every fucking Yankee game, but I don't watch the Padres games. I don't watch the Texans games. You know what I mean? I don't have time to watch the Texas games. Now, there are fantasy baseball players that watch every fucking game all day nonstop, and they've got the, you know, the red zone, you know, the strike zone channel that has 20 games on screen. There are those guys. But for me, if I'm going to, you know, I'd say I got time for one show a week, and maybe some highlights on a Sunday, you know what I mean, to watch. Mm-hmm. So to me, Game Changer Wrestling just gives you a lot of stuff, man. You can see a lot of death matches if you want. And real quick, I remember there was a point last year when people were like, does GCW even run fucking death matches? And Brett was like hot, like, we ran 3 death matches last show. What are these people talking about? You know, it's hilarious. But, you know, they give you variety of the roster is constantly bringing in more people. You get high-end angles. You get high-end feuds. You get death matches. And it's just interesting, you know, like if tomorrow they were like, hey, we're running a show in Thailand on an elephant refuge and we're donating money to them. It'd be like, oh, damn, that's interesting. Like, that's kind of cool. You know what I mean? I equate to like the first time you saw Shotgun Saturday Night, the WWE show. It was like, whoa, this is interesting. I like watching this, because the thing is, I can watch 2 guys run the ropes and tie up. I can watch that all fucking day. I am a firm believer of the more you see of something, the less you give a shit about it. And so to me, if I've got so much time, yeah, GCW is like going to be a stop for me 99% of the time in some way. Maybe I'll fast forward a little bit, because I don't like all styles of wrestling. Mm-hmm. Not everybody does, but I guarantee I'll find some stuff I really like. And you have the hot crowds. Hot crowds mean so much in wrestling. Onita playing to a dead crowd is not fun. You know what I mean? You need hot crowds.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's why I think that Game Changer Wrestling does stand above most companies. I really do.
Yeah, I think one thing we have learned in the pandemic era is that wrestling needs crowds, and crowds need wrestling. It's you can't have one and have the other. And yes, I did go to the shows, outdoor shows in Indianapolis, and it didn't have that same feeling as per I had I'd attended TOS 666, which was the official real first full crowd at the Showboat, and the energy was just different there. It really was. Yeah. And of course, you did watch TOS 666. And of course, your friend and my friend, a friend of the show, and Alex Colon, made history, the three-peats, of course. And what was truly, in my opinion, I don't know about you, truly, I think three of the best matches I think any single wrestler on the planet could possibly have. What were your thoughts on TOS 666?
I mean, you know, I never try to go into hyperbole and be like, this was the greatest fucking... Yeah, I never try to do that. Because your memory... I mean, there's been how many deathmatch tournaments? Probably like 200. You know what I mean? But the shit that stands out will always kind of be there in the front of your brain. And TOS 666, I mean, in 10 years, am I going to think it was so great? Maybe not. But in 3 years, probably. In 3 years, I'll probably still be going, man, but do you remember when Alex Colon, 3P, you know, that... It was like the perfect storm of just the crowds are back. Alex had a great angle, and it was great, great matches. You know, and I think that, oh shit, babe, is the mail here? Our mail is here. So, oh shit, the mangoes are here, aren't they? You have to buy mangoes here through the mail.
Really? Oh,
and goodness. They're expensive.
Oh, man.
But anyway, so yeah, I mean, I think the TOS, 666 was great. And, you know, I was just watching Masters of Pain, and it's not to take away anything from it. It was a really fun tournament. But it's like when, again, going back to baseball, it's like a Yankees versus the Red Sox playoff game versus a mid-season, you know, kind of day game. You know, it just – TOS is the big game, and I thought it was great.
It really did live up to any and all expectation. This was a roster – that, in my opinion, was a lot more like opportunistic. You weren't going to get every powerhouse in the game to do that tournament. You had Masters of Pain the next week. You have King of the Deathmatch down the road. You have everything in between. It's summer of death matches, so we're buckling up for the ride. But this TOS 666 roster absolutely blew it out of the water for the opportunities they were getting. I mean, look at Effie. Effie had a near 30-minute. It was like, what was it, 20 minutes for
22
Effie?
22 minutes or something like that.
That is more than I think he could have ever imagined in an opportunity with a guy like Raver, who is really back in the saddle. He is back doing death matches when he wasn't too sure, and gave us really the match of a lifetime for Effie, in all honesty. But of course, as well, I mean, Atticus Koger, I can't speak enough about him. Me and Alex spoke very highly of him when he came on the show, just how he has formed into this absolute awe-inspiring bad guy who,
well,
yeah, go ahead.
My thing about that, I just want to make a quick comment. And I always will say up front, I'm not a wrestler, because in my life, through watching YouTube shooter interviews and stuff, wrestlers hate the fuck out of non-wrestlers criticizing their work, right?
Yeah, right.
They hate it. You know, Bully Ray trying to tune up people and shit. So I just want to say, I'm not a wrestler. I'm a fan. But from a fan point of view, and from a Japanese wrestling point of view, where they take training and things like that much more patiently, I want to say this. Atticus Kogar is, he's like the whole, he's the real deal. You know, that dude was under our SP's wing. He was not a main event player for the past, how's it long been, 18 months or so?
No.
He's been, you know, he's been, I won't say doing the jobs, but he's been an undercard guy, you know what I mean? And he slowly developed this character. He slowly developed his match style. He works all coming, H2O, ICW, GCW. Yeah. He wins, he loses, he does tag matches, blah, blah, blah. And it shows when he had that, you know, the TOS final, everyone was like, oh shit, this is the fucking next guy. This is the next guy. We can all see it. He's not the guy now, but this is the next guy. No doubt about it. And there's other guys who are coming up at the same time who are being pushed too hard, who aren't working enough companies, who aren't doing enough different match styles, who haven't evolved their character. And I just think Atticus stands head and shoulders above all of the new crop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I'm glad someone else said it, because if I said it, they'd be like, oh, it's his podcast. Of course he'd say it. But yeah, Atticus really is head above everyone in what he's and I will say, like, the matches he's had with Alex, like, look back to last TOS.
Yeah.
He had that match. It was pretty good. Like, you could tell they had a chemistry there. Flash forward, New Year's Day. Alex was able to kind of slow his motions, but get more out of him than I think maybe other wrestlers could. Then flash forward to TOS 666, where he was given a final opportunity. Like, maybe for other wrestlers, like, going 0-3 or something like that would be detrimental. But for Atticus, there's a story at each and every single match, which it's almost crazy that a novel concept like that is kind of sometimes a lost art. What do you think? And Atticus has found that.
It's like, it's not, I mean, it's, I guess, yeah, it's a lost art just because it doesn't have, I mean, wrestling is so, I hesitate to call it hotshotting because you aren't even hotshotting anything.
No.
Wrestling is just so thrown together there now. You know, wrestling is the, you know, most companies are, you get on a cell phone, just go, you and you. You know what I mean? Like, that's, and that's it. But here you have two guys who, you have, you know, a company that kind of lets the wrestlers do their own booking and trust them. And then you have two guys who put a lot of effort into their booking, and it shows.
And one thing I want to point out before we move on, Atticus, his promo work is next level compared to almost the entire independent wrestling community. Like, I will literally share like 50 times his promos from anything he does. And some people will no sell it. Some people, but like, I'm like, this is the guy you need to listen to now. Like, I could just pick the Cole Radrick promo, or the TOS part two parter, or the Masada promo. Like, he it's all out there. Like he convinces me in less than 2 minutes to say, "Damn, this is why you should care about
that."
I want to watch that. And it's sometimes that is apparently a lost start. Like, some guys do the promo and it's not the best, but we're all working on it. But with him, it's like he's found it in his own modernistic way that makes it feel fresh.
Well, it's like I do fucking video work, and I know what goes into doing video work. And he does video work. You know, he gets clips of movies, and he does, you know, he makes it into a real video that it's like, okay, this is cool to watch. You know what I mean? It's not just guys in the chair sitting in their fucking computer room just
July 12th.
You know, it's like, no, he's fucking, he's writing it down. He's writing poetry about that match. He's using the symbol. It's like, wow, this was fun to watch for 2 minutes and 20 seconds. And I know that takes work and time to put in. And I compare it to Schlack. You know, Schlack 100% got over to the point that he is off of his first, that first year or two that he was doing promos. And people love those promos because nobody else was doing promos in that way. Mm-hmm. And now Schlack doesn't need to do those promos. And maybe there'll come a time when Atticus doesn't have time to do those for all of his matches. But it's putting in the work. It's grabbing the brass ring is the phrase, you know?
Yeah, grabbing the brass ring. Yeah, I think that you bring up all just great points as always, Steve. And of course, with talking about the World of Deathmatch, and who are other guys that you see that have really caught your attention throughout the last year, maybe during the pandemic or even before? Like, who are guys that you think are like, okay, this guy definitely is interesting?
Sure. I'll be completely honest. Like, if you're not on this list, then I don't know what to tell you. I think number one is obviously going to be fucking Nolan Edward. I think Nolan Edward, that was a dude that, you know, I said it a whole bunch on the podcast. He shouldn't be doing death matches. He should be, he should be an Impact tag team guy or something. You know, he should be like a Lost in the Shuffle guaranteed contract NXT guy. You know, he's got so much, but he said, no, that ain't the path for me or whatever, you know. He brings so much to the table. He's obviously, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know him. Maybe he's a big dick, but he gives off all the impression of being a very patient, calculated guy who wants to learn and improve and all this type of stuff. I can tell you now that of all of these guys, the Japanese fucking wrestlers pop for him the most,
really?
You know, off of the shows that kind of get passed around. You know what I mean? So, I think that Nolan Edwards stands head and shoulders above all of them, next to Atticus, of course. Of that, I mean, I think that Ruben Steele is really good, but he's like, I mean, and I'm not saying this to slam anybody, he's like 39. He's probably not going to be like the next big thing. I think that Effie cut that promo where he was like, people are saying that I shouldn't be in the TOS, but you don't understand what I'm bringing in terms of like social media and stuff. And I made a joke tweet about Effie and he fucking retweeted it. And that is now my most liked tweet of all time. He really has a huge social media imprint, and Effie, and he's got balls. He's not holding back anything. And I think that Effie is, I don't think Effie will ever be the I'm a fucking deathmatch guy. I think he'll always be the hybrid, I can do deathmatches kind of guy, but Effie brings a lot to the fucking table. He brings a lot of character, and he's on top of that a great wrestler. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So great, you know, big ups to Effie. And the last one, you know, obviously people are gonna be like, well, what about Akira? Akira's great. If I'm going to analyze it, if I'm going to put my pen down, right, okay, what are the pros and cons? I think Akira just hasn't evolved in the way people thought he would. His best match is against Reed Bentley. You know what I mean? Like that's it. His best match, his best matches are against his trainers, you know?
Yes.
And that's fine. That's great. But I think when you watch him, you know, I was watching Masters of Pain, and you can just see those moments where he's doing the wild flailing strikes, or he's lost. You can see him in matches where he's just really lost and he's just clinging for something to do. You know, there was a match against Insane A, and this was a year ago. I'm not saying
with Jeff King. I know exactly where you're talking about
with Jeff King, where he was lost, man. You could see it in his face where he's like, what do I do now? I don't know what to do. And I'm not a wrestler. I don't know how you get that knowledge. But I imagine it's just from fucking wrestling, doing more and more and more matches. I think that Akira just hasn't evolved in the way people think. And Alex Ocean, I think it's completely devolved for whatever reason. And I don't want to get into people's lives, but I mean, he just devolved completely. So that's my lay of land. Am I forgetting anybody?
I would love to point
about it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh,
go ahead.
Bam Sullivan, I've seen of him, he's very good. So, yeah, go on.
Bam was my very first guest on Your Dose of Death, a dear friend of the show, a guy who still puts my stuff over to this day. I am in absolute gratitude to Bam for putting the chance on some 26-year-old from North Chicago to do some weird deathmatch podcast. And now look at where we are, giving him a shout-out 20-so episodes later. Akira as well is a friend of the show. And I think I definitely am intrigued to see what Akira does next. Of course, winning Masters of Pain, spoiler alert to anyone who is not either got the DVDs, which I did, I already know, and or taking clips or watching online. I know Nolan Edward, actually, interesting story. I've heard, I don't know if you heard this, he actually was a producer on Impact.
Yeah, that blew me away. Yeah,
that blew me away as well. I had found out from a friend, and I was like, that is one way to get into the business before you actually start wrestling, as being a producer. And now look, he is a guy who is apparently on the Japanese deathmatch wrestler's radar now, which is kind of crazy to really think about. And yes, Atticus, as we talked about before, a guy who me and Steve both have really, really high regards for. And yeah, Ruben Steele, just want to give a shout out to him. I know he just hurt his shoulder, and he is going to be in recovery. And yes, I love Ruben Steele, man. I know he is of the older age, but I just watched his match with Aaron Mercer. It's on YouTube for Heavy Metal Wrestling. A very interesting match with a guy, Aaron Mercer, who's I'm not as familiar with him, but that death match definitely convinced me he can do them.
Yeah.
And so shout out to Ruben Steele. Best wishes and recovery. I know that is not easy, especially a shoulder injury like that. So I hope we see more of him down the road. So just kind of wrapping up here, of course, again, Steven, thank you for coming on. This has been an absolute blast getting to peek into your brain, of course, as well, for as long as we've talked. And I just kind of I like to do this with all my guests. I like to give you the time of day to just plug away your stuff, plug as much as you can. The floor is yours, my friend.
Sure. I mean, just, you know, the Patreon, that's it. You know, that money does go into our pockets and it helps, you know. So, yeah, just go to the GCW Patreon. We put all of our shit into that. Don't follow me on Twitter. Don't at me. Oh, but here's something you could do. go to Twitch. Go to Twitch. Search like Stephen A-Y-Y. And I'm leaving Japan next month. And I'll have a lot of free time. I plan on streaming on Twitch. Follow me there. I'm going to be doing TEW booking. I'm going to be playing Mario Kaizo Hacks. So that would be something that you could do to support me. But yeah, that's about it. You know, I try to keep a low profile in general. Sorry.
No, that's all right, man. I mean, I love giving everyone the time to do that.
Yeah, I'm not selling T-shirts or anything like that. So yeah.
Yeah, rest in peace, Shopping with Ninja, of course, that endeavor.
Don't get me started on that. No, hey,
I supported it.
Yeah, no, it was great, man. I mean, the people that did, shout out. And, you know, I'll still, you know, until I leave, I'm willing to, you know, if anybody wants merchandise, I'm going to a couple shows before I leave next month. And I'm all about helping people out. But what happened was, you know, I had like a merch store where I was just, hey, I'm going to a Freedom show. Do you guys want shirts and posters and shit? And my margins were pretty low. I was trying to be really nice about it and stuff. Mm-hmm. And long story short, I just had boom, 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 three people stuck me with high end items and it wiped out any money I made for a whole month. And I was like, this is a stupid business. I'm not doing this anymore. Fuck this.
Well, you know, it was a good, I enjoyed it. I know many people, I know some people did. And of course, I was sad to see it go. I did actually end up getting a bunch of stuff. I'd have my, on my work desk, I had my little Bloody June Kasai thing still standing there since it got shipped to me. So I thank you for that. It's my little desk buddy now is Bloody Kasai.
No problem.
Yeah. And of course, again, thank you, Steven, for coming on. Of course, you're a well of knowledge in my mind, and I hope others who get to listen to this really get a real understanding of the wrestling from your point of view. And it's always nice to get different points of view. So again, thank you, Steven, for taking the time out of your day to talk with me, man.
One more plug, just because if you haven't seen it and you want to learn more about this stuff, you cannot find a better source of info than the History of FMW. You can find that at Bahu FM. Oh, hold on, I gotta double check the
URL.
Yep, yeah, go to bahufmw.com and they have there's a YouTube series, History of FMW. It starts in 1989 and it goes all through all of the Japanese death match wrestling through Big Japan and Freedoms and IWA and Wing, and that is probably the best. I mean, it's fucking 40 hours of hardcore learning.
Yeah,
I've
watched a few of those weirdo episodes.
Yeah,
I've watched a few of those episodes. They're insane how well done they are. And yes, Bahu FMW, they do an incredible job with the History of FMW stuff. So,
and the final episode of the 2020 episode is going to be coming up pretty soon. So,
yeah. Oh, awesome! And of course, a good time to listen to it with FMWE coming out very soon. I know you're going to be going to that as well.
I am, yeah.
That's going to be
my last wrestling show. No. Freedom's on the 5th is my last. But yeah, that's my last two shows before I leave Japan. So,
well, again, Steven, thank you so damn much for coming on this show. And for everyone listening, maybe not hit him up, or at least could support on the GCW Patreon podcast. He is an awesome individual. Thank you for everything you do, Steven. Thank you to everyone listening to this episode. From Lauren Rosenberg, Steven A. Thank you guys for listening, and we're signing off. Thank you.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This has been a Countout Podcast.